We're reading from John chapter 18, verses 33 to 38. This is the reading of the Gospel for the Sunday of Christ the King. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate asked him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Pilate asked him, "What is truth?" At his arrest, in the Gospel of John, Jesus is in control. They came for him, and then Jesus, knowing all that was to happen to him, came forward and asked them, "For whom are you looking?" They answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus replied, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. When Jesus said to them, "I am he," they stepped back and fell to the ground. Again he asked them, "For whom are you looking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he." Even on the cross, this king on the cross is undefeated. At the end, he proclaims in triumph, "It is finished," and gives up his spirit to God. He is still in control. How do we understand this king? When in another telling of the story, even he loses faith and cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" These are the Gospels of John, which provides the reading for this week, and the Gospel of Mark, where we spent most of our time this year. Is it the same Christ? The old joke says that Jesus sat down on the mountain and said to the disciples, "Now listen carefully, get this straight. I don't want four versions of this going around." Four versions is what happened, plus many more since. But together, they provide us with a gospel for all seasons. They give us a place to stand and observe Jesus, no matter what's happening in our lives, and allow us to invite him into our lives, if that's the language we like, no matter who we are. Uniting Church scholar Bill Loder says, John is a gospel of radical simplifications. It's easy to miss this, because John's language is mystical. It's many layered and full of allusions and symbolism. It's a different kind of language to the way we speak and think. But John is radically simple. He lays it down. Christ is the King. You either see it or you don't. It's that simple. John is like the bark proof for the existence of God. The bark proof goes like this. There is the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Therefore, there must be a God. You either see this or you don't. When I first met that proof, I stopped in surprise. And then I saw it. The wonderful, glorious music of Bach. How can there be music like this except that there is a God? But if you can't see it, if you don't get it, that proof is pure foolishness, a mere sophistry hiding behind name. This is the theology of John. It's the theology of the ambit claim. And if you don't see, you're blind. That does not mean it is easy, nor that it is foolish. John realizes the paradox and the absurdity of his claim. He builds it into his gospel. It is out of the paradox that we become able to see. As Bill Loder says in this week's First Thoughts, Jesus was not the King of the Jews. The charge was false. And yes, he is the King of the Jews, inverted commas. The charge is unwittingly true. He is a mad king, weak, crucified, crowned with thorns, pathetic, defeated. Mark has been telling us about love and self-giving, a path that led him to this. And John retains the stark melody. As Jesus' life is subversive, so also is his death. It depicts indeed what Jesus taught in word, that greatness is lowliness and compassion. The first is last, and loving matters most. At the moments of life when we are in love with God, when the bark of the universe is lifting our souls, this high poetry works. This deluded, suffering, dying king is the king. Compassion, service, and love lift us into the presence of Almighty God. Can you not see how wonderful this is? Can you not see that in this paradox lives the truth of all things? This is the glorious King. You either see this or you don't. Pilate asked, "What is truth?" when Jesus told him that everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate thinks he's questioning Jesus, but actually Jesus is testing Pilate, the judge. Is being judged, as Raymond Brown puts it. Pilate's response, what is truth, is not to be understood as a profound philosophical question. It does echo the imperiousness of the Roman when challenged. But ironically, it is a self-condemnation. His failure to recognize truth and hear Jesus' voice shows that he does not belong to God. You either see this, or you don't. But in my life, there are too many days when bark is not glorious music. Bark is just noise. John Cage on a bad day and worse. There is nothing to say. There is only pain. Silence is the only response that does not mock me. If you read me John on that day, you do me damage. You abuse me with his absurdity. There's no glory. Agnosticism is the best of it, and psychic pain that too often longs for death, or at least the sleep of weeks. We who live in the love of John, who enjoy our bark most days of our lives, do well to remember that most people walk the path of life along the edge of the crumbling cliffs I have just described. We are all vulnerable to being pushed uncomfortably close to the precipice. Too many of us spend life scrabbling at the edge, too often trying to keep our footing. It is no choice. It just is. You either see this or you don't. And for us, flailing at the edge, there is the Gospel of Mark. I'm reworking words from Monday's post. In Mark, Jesus has been coming to Jerusalem, all the while warning that he will be killed. It's a gospel with a cloud hanging over it, even at the best of times. Even God's a bit ambiguous. Perhaps this is why he comes in a cloud on the mountain of the Transfiguration. For even that high moment, glorious and worthy of the Gospel of John, is immediately followed by demon possession and failed prayer down in the Valley of Life. At the end, Mark prefigures the inevitable death of Jesus with the destruction of Jerusalem. It's as though he's inviting us to let all our religious hopes and presuppositions be utterly shattered, as were those of Israel. Shattered they will be, for Jesus' arrival in Jerusalem rapidly turns into total disaster. He's betrayed, he's deserted, he's tried in a kangaroo court, he's executed alone. There is no resurrection to be seen, only an empty tomb. The disciples are so afraid or stunned, they don't even go to the tomb. So it's left to the young man in the tomb to tell the women, tell the disciples to go to Galilee. But the women are too frightened to tell anyone, and the gospel ends hanging. And perhaps worse than all this, Jesus seems to lose faith in himself. My God, my God, why have you abandoned me? Somewhere in this laying before us of the paradox, life is only to be found when everything is lost. When there is total loss, there is hope of resurrection. When we go back to Galilee, with what little dignity and energy we have left after our failure and humiliation, and begin life again, living as Jesus would live. When we live with compassion and in service and love to others, we will find Jesus there. We will find resurrection. We will find that, like Peter's mother-in-law and the dead girl, we're being lifted up. We will find, like the blind men of Mark, that we can see clearly. Mark tells us there's no escape. There's no avoiding the pain of depression and suffering when it comes. There's no avoiding the injustice of the world. God owes us for all God does to us by putting us here, as Wiesel says. But in a paradox as bold as that of John, if we will go through the pain, if we will march grimly into death, and we must all face it or be forever fleeing, we will find resurrection and Jesus. You either see this or you don't. Except that here, you can also find it. Instead of freezing by the cliff, curling up and refusing to move, we can risk the edge. We can get up and fall off. And sometimes we do. And when we do it because we stop thinking only of ourselves and begin merely to face in the direction of Galilee, we will be lifted up. It strikes me that these are mighty fine words, preacher's words, when the reality is miserable, shitty, desperate, and full of despair. Mark is no easy gospel. Yet while the glory of John is a flickering glory. Sometimes I see it, but often it's blown out in the wind. Mark is real. I live in Mark. At the end of the dying, I see it. Truly, this man was a son of God, the son who did not lose faith. He did not cry out that God was gone or that God was not. He cried out to God, "Why have you abandoned me?" This is a faith I can follow. This is a real king.